Interrupting the current neo-Ukronio, climate-challenged, behaviorally-controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, pustulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude-Busting episode BTWRLM677. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed. Bring those miscreants with you. And this is still donation season, big time. Lots of things going on, lots of hardware to replace and keep up with. As I hope you've been seeing the changes go on slowly over the network and the continuing work that goes on, I can't say it's not 24/7 because I think it is. I've got people in different places around the world doing things or doing places in different places of the world or through different places of the world. So we're doing a lot of work, trying to keep things work. I understand there was even more refinements. It's an ongoing process as again, Grimner Radio has been built up from the bottom up, starting from zero, I understand. So it's a whole new setup. And so we're going to have a little bit of problems here and there. And we're working through that. And sound does a ton of work to get all that done and supporting everything that's going on. If it wasn't for him, you wouldn't be hearing me. And it's not just because of the network. It's what he provides to help me get the word out. So there's a lot of things going on that I would ask people to help donate with. And help this network to build and grow, and however it ends up being, it may not be what I thought it could be in the way that I came from, which is normal networking and normal radio production, then that's so be it. Let's move into the next phase. I'm not too worried about how it looks, just as long as people start listening, learning, and then taking action. Again, the non-spectator that we are, whether or not we want to. And while minding your own business, thinking you weren't the target and a spectator, I have a follow-up on the report last episode of the fatal shooting of Lorenzo Salgado Araujo. Governor Abbott coming out to sound like he cares, but only after Houston Police Chief J. No Diaz Jr. sent a letter to the DPS director on Tuesday requesting that the Texas Rangers step in. Governor Abbott calls the Texas Rangers to conduct an investigation into deadly ICE shooting. But what the Houston mayor, Whitmer, said that's very interesting regarding Abbott's call to involve the Texas Rangers in investigation, which Texas Rangers should have already been on the case before Salgado Araujo's body got cold, because, quote, for decades, it has been the standard established practice of the Texas Rangers to investigate OIS when requested by an involved law enforcement agency, local, state, or federal, or a prosecuting entity. But Abbott, leading the parade from behind, caught going the wrong direction politically, that the Houston mayor says, at a time like this, we must set aside politics and partisanship and focus on the facts. So it is Abbott's politics that caused this, and those politics had to give way, the politics that helped cause the murder. And that we must set aside politics to do a murder investigation? Is that how we work this? You had to say that? In other words, forcing the dropping of the ICE complying with local policing standards, but when someone is murdered, we have to drop the politics we use to allow the murder so it can be investigated. Causes me to ask, how's that egg drying on Abbott looking right about now? Or is it too humid in Houston to dry? Mayor Whitmer, or Whitmire, also asks that at the same time, the federal government must do its part by requiring body cameras and stronger training for ICE officers to help transparency, accountability, and public trust, as we do with the Houston Police Department. Something Abbott's politically expedient carte blanche federal pandering did not insist on when ICE was imposed upon Texas by Abbott. This comment by Whitmire answers why the state didn't act as I was thinking it could if it was interested in protecting people within its borders. Texas Rangers fecklessness aside, had the Texas Rangers hit this case before Salgado Araujo's body got cold, then there wouldn't be any politics to drop or get in the way, especially since those pandering politics had already done their dirty work to an extrajudicial execution without warrant and in violation of law, whether federal or state. The post-founding father Lincoln I state a Texas vassalage to the federal government aside. That wasn't federal, federal government aside. And what was that political pressure from Abbott? against his own state relative to this? Governor Greg Abbott threatens $200 million in funding from major Texas cities over ICE policies prior. Governor Greg Abbott's office has threatened to cut state funding to three of Texas's largest cities if they fail to change policies that the governor says limit police cooperation with federal immigration authorities. Around $200 million in public safety funding is at risk for Houston, Dallas, and Austin, which all have rules directing police officers not to prolong the detention of individuals during encounters like traffic stops for Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents. Some cities have also been under legal scrutiny from Attorney General Ken Paxton's office, which said their policies violate Senate Bill 4, a state law that bans local governments from adopting measures that, quote, materially limit, close quote, immigration enforcement. Now, Abbott's threats very well removed any protections to the people in Texas or any hesitation by ICE agents to make sure they would mind their manners as they enforce immigration law, leaving traffic stops to the state or else. I hope you understand what I just said about that, leaving the people unprotected, because we found out that the courts have allowed ICE agents to attack American citizens, if I should use the word so carefully. Americans can be attacked for no good reason, for no reason at all. And Houston Mayor Whitmer appears to be reminding Governor Abbott and we the people that Abbott has been leading the band in the wrong direction, that it is Governor Abbott who created the conditions which allowed a man to be murdered. The mighty feckless Rangers sitting on their hands until told to investigate, now without crucial camera and other evidence, to require, quote, body cameras and stronger training to ICE officers to help transparency, accountability, and public trust, as we do with the Houston Police Department, close quote, would not materially interfere with the lawful immigration enforcement that Abbott ought to have threatened at all. And so we see the domino effect of bad governing. There's nothing in the capacity that we would protect we the people from known attacks that the ICE could do on Americans, and particularly since ICE apparently doesn't need to do traffic stops for immigration enforcement. Especially when hearing these murdered people have never been a target anyway, unless the opportunity for an unaccountable public execution was pretty good. Alex Pretty and Renee Good, remember? American citizens murdered in their cars under the pretense that an ICE agent feared for their lives as they put themselves in harm's way or they attacked our people, the feral immigration agents that they are. ICE told to pause most traffic stops after killing man in Maine now. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents have been told to stop making most traffic stops Tuesday after agents fatally shot another man on Monday. Monday's deadly shooting was the second committed by ICE agents in the course of a week. The second extrajudicial public execution in a week. The ICE has a greater murder rate today than New York City had in 2025. The second extrajudicial public execution in a week. Amazing. And we sit here as people watching. Tuesday's order directs immigration agents to pause traffic stops and use other methods to carry out their enforcement duties. ICE said in a statement that it is, quote, always evaluating our procedures to keep our officers safe and criminals off the streets. And when they are one and the same, the officers are the murderous criminals with the badge, what then? The Department of Homeland Security said in a statement that an ICE agent was, quote, fearing for public safety, close quote, when they opened fire and the victim of the shooting, quote, attempted to flee the scene, close quote. And I have to ask, is running from someone trying to murder you fleeing or self-defense? And what threat did he pose to the public safety before it was decided to put Guerrero on ICE gunning him down? The man killed on Monday, 26-year-old Juan Sebastian Guerrero, was not the target of a warrant. Senator Angus King, independent from Maine, said in an appearance on CNN. King said he learned This while speaking with the Secretary of Homeland Security, Mark Wayne Mullen. King added that he was told the agents who were present at the time of the shooting were not wearing body cameras. Just what Whitmire was asking about. Why aren't you having the same standards that we hold our own officers to? So, quote, evaluating our procedures to keep our officers safe, close quote, meant not wearing body cameras. Is that what I'm supposed to understand now? So they could take the presumed non-target criminal off the streets as well? Cameras that would have likely shown agent misconduct, as in every other public execution they've committed? Guerrero was an immigrant from Colombia. The Colombian embassy said in a statement that it has, quote, requested information and clarification from the Department of Homeland Security regarding the circumstances surrounding this lamentable death, and will continue to follow the case closely as the investigation progresses, close quote. And we just heard, like, what investigation, really? The Portland Press-Herald published a photo of Guerrero's vehicle after the shooting, showing that his windshield had four bullet holes in it. Quote, the question is, what did he do with his vehicle, close quote, King asked. Quote, were officers threatened? Were the threats rising to the level of justified deadly force, close quote? And there's the thing I want you to focus on, that justified force. Go to your local state statutes and find out what the justification would be. And if we're not seeing that as a people that are being, can be gunned down in the next moment because we all think we're just spectators in this non-spectator sport arena, then we may want to get a different thought in our brain on how we're going to respond to all this. The threat is he was a free-range human, is what happens, and an animal without inheritable blood. And the apes have taken over the planet. When I went through this human and lack of inheritable blood and the lack of ability to inherit the posterity of the establishment that we started with last episode, if you want to go listen to that a little bit. But we're taken over by the planet of the apes. Are we astronauts that came back? And speaking of apes, Senate Democrats block $1 trillion annual defense bill. Schumer says bill can't become a permission slip for recklessness in Iran. Well, the uniparty is as the uniparty does. Trump is recklessly warring anyways. Senate Democrats blocked a $1 trillion tango dollar annual defense bill Tuesday, refusing to advance the bipartisan uniparty package that would substantially increase the Pentagon spending, including a pay raise for the troops, in protest of President Trump's war against Iran. It's President Trump's war against Iran. Let's remember that part. And I'm not really politically affiliated with any of it. The Democrats are uniparty to me. They're both corrupt parties. Let's cut through the nonsense and see what's going on. And in some regard, who cares what their partyship is if they're making the right answers? They want to have infighting within the party. Well, they all want the war for Israel, but they just don't want to get there the same way. Well, then we will let them do that. Don't interrupt your enemy when they're making mistakes, right? Senate Democrat leader Chuck Schumer announced his opposition, and other key Democrats said they could not support the annual bill known as the National Defense Authorization Act as the war drags into a fifth month with no clear endgame in sight. And let me remind you on that, it was not supposed to be a war, and it was not supposed to be ended. And it hasn't started, but just recently, a week or so ago, when Trump redeclared it. We'll get to that news and noosedness in a moment. So this whole game is confused, and I say on purpose, and it's all for politics and show. The tally was 50-46, failing largely along party lines to reach the threshold needed, and there was some Republicans that didn't vote for that. And they're already on record from before all this, explaining what. It has to do with Israel. It doesn't have to do with the war in Iran. Quote, the NDAA cannot become a permission slip for the recklessness that we see occurring in Iran, close quote, Schumer said ahead of voting. Quote, Donald Trump does not get to drag the American people deeper into a war he cannot explain and does not know how to end, and then demand that Congress look the other way, close quote. And where were all these people long before this as well? But sure he does. He just told Congress he dragged us into another war that he can't actually explain while you wring your AIPAC compromise hands, Schumer. The Senate vote comes a day after the White House formally notified Congress that it had resumed bombing strikes against Iran, effectively undoing the fragile ceasefire in the conflict that has resulted in economic disruptions, to say the least, including volatile gas prices ahead of the midterm elections. Yep, so the political shark smelling voter economic hemorrhaging in the water in this segment of the show. Congress has tried repeatedly to slap guardrails. This is AI, right? Slap guardrails on the administration. Voting, maybe it is. Maybe that's why it's error prone. What do you think? Maybe it's giving us something here. Congress has tried repeatedly to slap guardrails on the administration, voting more than 10 times on various war powers resolutions that would halt hostilities because the war profiteering uniparty. But those efforts have not succeeded, and most Republicans in the House and Senate majorities back Trump. Senate Majority Leader John Thune called the defense package a good bill and implored his colleagues to provide the resources to ensure the U.S. is kept safe. Safe from what non-fraudulent demonstrated attack, Mr. Thune? Some guy in a cave in a land far, far away? How about the guy that didn't really have WMDs? Or is it the guy that threatened the U.S. dollar because he wanted his people free to use gold and silver money? In a desert, he was greening with an aquifer that was rich. Quote, we have an obligation here in Congress to ensure that they have everything they need for whatever the mission may be, close quote, he said. Whatever the mission may be, like the current war crimes against Iran and piracy in the Strait of Hormuz, the genocide in Palestine expanding in now into Lebanon, and the regime change coup in the Ukraine. Those whatever missions? After the bill failed to advance, Thune switched his vote in a procedural mood that will allow the leader to bring it back up for consideration again later. Like something stuck to your shoe, I suppose. So, yeah, you have to keep the options open to continue genocide, regime change, piracy on the high seas, or to steal other people's stuff. Exactly right. Senate Armed Services Committee Chairman Roger Wicker called the Democrat vote to block the bill unprecedented and a new low. How dare they block our warmongering authorita? For decades, Congress had made sure to approve the annual defense bill each year, setting the policy and direction for the Department of War now, and authorizing the funds that would later be allocated to carry out its investments in the military-industrial complex, systems, supplies, and missions, admitting that the uniparty agrees with extrajudicial presumption of guilt of every American since 9/11, and pays for that oppression of the American people and the oppression of the peoples around the world for no pretty or good reason. Right, Alex and Renee? Except cause national security, don't you know? Because the U.S. was so interested in national security, it allowed the Zionists to pull off 9/11 to get us here. This year, the 66th annual NDAA is running into a double whammy of opposition. Lawmakers are fuming over Trump's military actions against Iran and resisting the White House's request to substantially increase Pentagon spending to $1.5 trillion tango dollars, up from about $900 billion Bravo dollars last year. We're winners, folks. Your pocketbook is a winner. I can just tell you that. Your cost of living's a winner. The sizable boost aligns with the White House's 2027 budget request, as the Trump administration seeks a generational investment to modernize the Defense Department, which it refers to as the Department of War under Secretary Pete Hegseth. Hegseth was scheduled to meet later Tuesday evening with House Republicans as Congress considers providing additional money through a separate budget reconciliation bill the party can pass on its own, overpowering the opposition from Democrats, overpowering representation of the people. As I've said, democracy the weapon. The White House has requested $350 billion Bravo dollars from Congress under the budget reconciliation process, but House GOP leaders have indicated it is likely to be a much smaller amount, more in line with the $87 billion Bravo dollars the White House requested last month as supplemental funding for Iran. So all this screaming and yelling about not wanting to go to war and support Trump's war in Iran, no, they're going to give him $87 billion more already. This is, I reported here, I think, four or five episodes ago. The extra defense funding comes on top of the additional $150 billion Bravo dollar Republicans already provided the Pentagon last year during their Trump's big tax break bill that some say has not been spent or fully accounted for. And from the mouth of the Zionist demon incarnate regarding the intention merging the Israeli military and technology with that of the U.S. United States governments, a wild Fox News hostess, Rachel Campos Duffy, goes off script and puts Netanyahu on the spot. His response should go viral. He gave the whole game away. Fox's Rachel Campos Duffy calls out Netanyahu on his plan to merge the U.S. and Israeli militaries. His plan, Netanyahu's plan, that's being considered. Not for you, not from you, but from a foreign leader. Campos Duffy asked, will that drawing down of foreign aid over the next 10 years be compensated by the proposal to have a merging of some sort between our Pentagon and your military, close quote? Yeah, Netanyahu responds, quote, I'm calling it from aid to partnership. Quote, I think the meshing of our two great countries of talent would strengthen America's competitive position, close quote. Quote, that certainly brings up some issues of sovereignty, Campos Duffy responds. And I wouldn't call what happened wild that she does when you read this notice. This is a post that someone else is talking about. So I wouldn't even really raise it up to the level of a calling out of Netanyahu. The host at the very end of the segment does take a prescient parting shot, bringing up the issue of the usurpation of American sovereignty, intelligently depriving the great deceiver the floor to dismiss the existential threat to Americans by their own representatives, so-called. But yes, Netanyahu's response should go viral, so get the link behind the woodshed blogcaster and spread it around. People need to make a lot of noise on this right now with no let-up. The Democrats didn't stop the bill because they didn't want to stop Israel integration. The Uniparty agrees with that treasonous overthrow. They can just make an issue out of what's going on with Iran that covers what they're actually doing for Israel. And underneath, while all this distraction is going on, they're proposing to integrate the two militaries, a severe and serious existential threat to America. And while Trump plays his part to distract from what appears inevitable with the current cricketude and the sound of silence, they don't want you there. Trump tells Netanyahu to leave Syria and Lebanon. The U.S. president has reportedly pressed the Israeli prime minister to withdraw forces from both countries amid a widening rift. As in now, withdraw the illegal belligerent Zionist political movement forces from Palestine. Why just stop at Lebanon? U.S. President Donald Trump has pressed Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to withdraw Israeli troops from Syria and begin redeploying forces from southern Lebanon, citing U.S. and Israeli officials. Yeah, let's just deploy those illegal belligerent Zionist political movement forces to a small rock outcropping in the South China Sea, and they can fight with Davy Jones over control of the tides. The reported appeal is the latest sign of a widening rift between the two leaders, with Trump pressing Israel to scale back its military deployments while Netanyahu's government continues to insist on maintaining them indefinitely. The fake news, as long as the threat of Israel military integration with the U.S. military is being considered, despite its setback in the Senate that we just read about and heard about. The House just sweetened the bad deal, adding the just as offensive SAVE Act, SAVE Act, to get the agreement as they press the reorganization of the United States extra constitutionally. And Trump didn't mention anything about Iran to Netanyahu either. So Trump never intended to honor the memorandum of understanding he signed with Iran, which included Israel stopping its hostilities in Lebanon. Trump warned Netanyahu during a phone call on Thursday that Israel's military presence in southern Syria risks further escalation. quote, they don't want you there. You should redeploy, Trump reportedly told the Israeli leader. The president delivered a similar message regarding southern Lebanon. The reported push shows a meeting between Trump and Syrian President Ahmad al-Sharaa on the sidelines of the NATO-NATO summit in Turkey last week. And all Trump has to do is actually just sanction Israel for good reason, like he sanctions Iran for no good and lawful reason. And everything else is P.T. Barnum Trump's greatest show in Kabuki theater on earth. The Trump administration has spent months trying to broker a new security arrangement between Israel and Syria. It also comes amid Washington's attempts to implement a U.S.-backed framework agreement between Israel and Lebanon reached last month, which framework agreement, unlike the framework war to nowhere agreement with Iran, the people of Lebanon were not involved in, with Hezbollah immediately rejecting it as a breach by the Lebanese government working with the foreign invaders to subvert their own country. Under the unwarranted deal, Israel committed to withdraw its forces from two pilot zones in southern Lebanon and allows the Lebanese army to deploy there. Israel has yet to begin the withdrawal. Of course, it hasn't. The pilot zones are admission of the acceptance of the illegal belligerent occupation and hostile aggressions amounting to war crimes. And all P.T. Barnum Trump, the most powerful dictator of the world, can say to St. Neu is, you should redeploy, not get out of Dodge or else. Okay, that wasn't investment advice. And admittedly, there's no Dodge in Lebanon, but you get the idiom, I trust. The next part of the article is Zionist propaganda, which you can read if you want at the link at the BTW Broadcaster at reallibertymedia.com. And check all that out. Lots of stuff, but that I'm not going to read here and waste the time reading or propagandizing for them. The article goes on to remind us of P.T. Barnum Trump's escapades, where in recent months, Trump has repeatedly criticized Israeli strikes in Lebanon, reportedly arguing Netanyahu had no F**king judgment, close quote, and calling him F**king crazy, close quote. And if you'll remember, there was some disagreement in the reporting as to how many asterisks were actually used by Trump when he said those things. The White House declined to comment on the details of the call and did not dispute Axios's account. Instead, a U.S. official reaffirmed Washington's support for Israel, telling the outlet that, quote, there has been no greater friend to Israel and a fighter for peace than President Trump, close quote. Israel has claimed Trump one of their messiahs. But that's right, the greatest show and kabuki theater on earth. And all you have to do is suspend your disbelief of the deceivers. Oh, and take your own advice, Mr. Let Them Eat Chaos in Chief. Get out of the Middle East, particularly the Strait of Hormuz and Iran. They don't want you there no more. The more serious threats to we the people, whether or not we the people see them, fiscal 2027 State Department spending bill passed by House passage of the bill merges it with voter ID legislation. These folks are really on the move. I can't tell you how fast it's all working. The House on Wednesday passed the fiscal, they're supposed to be your representatives. And we all know now, anybody listening behind the woodshed knows that ain't the truth, unless you just got here and didn't happen to know that. They work, you know, the money. The money laundering system is Congress, the compromised. The House on Wednesday passed the fiscal 2027 State Department spending bill shortly after rejecting an amendment that reignited Democratic fissures over Israel. In a mostly party-line 217-209 vote, the House passed the $47.3 billion Bravo Dollar National Security State Appropriations Bill. I'm emphasizing the State Department because it's a different bill than we've been talking about, and it's easy to get them all confused. I'm partly confused sometimes. I got to go back and read real close and understand really what's going on and what isn't going on and how they're – what we watch the political maneuvering that's going on inside, despite the noostis, what's really going on in the political maneuverings on the functionings of how the bills are cut and stuffed and all that other thing, or removed or added to, blended together, so that we never hear really what's going on, and the vote really isn't meant and made on what we are being told. eventually it's all brought together and gels, coagulates like a big blood clot against us. That vote came on the heels of a vote earlier in the afternoon against an amendment from Representative Thomas Massie, Republican from Kentucky, to cut off U.S. aid to Israel. Passage of the bill also officially merged it with voter ID registration that became the focus of the standoff among Republicans that recently paralyzed the House floor. While the inclusion of the voting bill unlocked the spending bill in the House, it complicates the measure's path forward in the Senate. And all I got to say is thank goodness. Overall, the spending bill's $47.3 billion, bravo, dollars for the State Department and other related agencies would represent a decrease of about $2.7 billion from the fiscal 2026 enacted level. But it would be about $11.7 billion, bravo, dollars more than what the Trump administration requested for fiscal 2027. And don't forget the reorganization going into the State Department of the USAID things. Democrats have largely opposed the funding bill because of the cuts, which includes a $902 million year-over-year drop in funding for global health, humanitarian, and other economic assistance programs. Republicans have defended the bill as saving taxpayer dollars while still addressing the most important U.S. national security needs. Funny how spending billions of bucks on foreigners means saving dollars. Is that how it works in your house? The bill, quote, makes a clear statement about American leadership, close quote, House Appropriations Chairman Tom Cole, Republican of Oklahoma, said on the House floor Wednesday, quote, we will engage where it matters, we will invest where it counts, and we will demand accountability for every dollar spent, close quote. Really, when we start the $22 trillion with the Pentagon, how about get their audit, get one audit in 15 years, right? The bill would also provide $1.5 billion, bravo, dollars for the so-called America First Opportunity Fund, a catch-all account that Democrats have accused of being a slush fund. While that would be $650 million more than a fiscal 2026 enacted level, it's $3.5 billion, bravo, dollars less than the Trump administration requested in 2027. If you're starting to fall asleep, please don't. We're getting through that real quickly here. But here it is. It was the Israel amendment that caused the most friction. Massey's amendment would have prohibited any of the funding in the bill from being used for Israel. The amendment would have also cut $3.3 billion, bravo, dollars including in the bill for Israel from the Foreign Military Financing Program. Opponents of the amendment, such as Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, a Democrat in New York, argued it was overly broad and would restrict humanitarian aid, while supporters, such as Minority Whip Catherine M. Clark, Democrat of Massachusetts, said it was important to send a message that the status quo is unacceptable. Ultimately, the amendment was rejected, 104-314. In addition to the Israel amendment, the House rejected another Massie amendment to prohibit funding for Jordan in a 6-421 vote, and one from Representative Chip Roy, a Republican of Texas, to ban funding for the United Nations in a 136-291 vote. One amendment from Representative Stube, Republican of Florida, was approved by voice vote, would withhold 100% of the funding for Nigeria until the State Department certifies that the country is, quote, taking effective steps to prevent and respond to violence and hold perpetrators accountable, close quote, among other criteria. While the amendment itself did not specify the nature of the violence, Stube posted on social media that it was intended to address anti-Christian violence. Republicans have claimed that sectarian violence in the country is targeting Christians, but experts say the reality is more complicated. If the House means it about addressing anti-Christian violence, why didn't the Massie amendment pass against funding Israel that does the same thing, holding the Zionist perpetrators accountable as in Nigeria? Yeah, that wasn't a question. So American leadership is okay with Zionists murdering Christians, but not when Nigerians murder Christians, right, Tom Cole? The House had originally planned to vote on a spending bill last month, but was forced to scrap the plan when the floor became frozen over an unrelated fight among Republicans on the voter ID bill and immigration policies. House GOP leadership resolved the standoff this week by adopting a rule for debate on the spending measure that merges the voting bill with the State Department bill and promising to hold a markup on a hardline immigration bill. In other words, the House passed the State Department National Security Foreign Affairs Appropriations Bill today, not the NDAA, and the SAVE Act, the Save America, was not included in the base text of the bill, but the rule passed on Tuesday merges them together upon passage. So, the Senate could strip the voting bill from the State Department bill when it takes up the spending measure, which I do believe it should. And when patriots, so-called, finally understand what it's meant by federal ID, they got duped into wanting, and how it's tied to the Siberian Gulag, then find out voting harder will not destroy the fascist digital panopticon the ID chains them to, it'll be too late. Because America, frankly, don't give a damn. Right, Scarlett? But despite your current cricketude, beyond the voting bill issue, the Senate's appropriation process is at a standstill amid the absence of Senator Mitch McConnell, Republican of Kentucky, and death of the Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, and a partisan stalemate on spending levels. Though most people don't seem to agree with me, we can only hope. Because Trump isn't waiting for any money from the compromised uniparty. Trump threatens to destroy Iran over assassination fears. The U.S. president said American military has orders to completely decimate, his words, quote, completely decimate, close quote, the country if Tehran targets him. Old Nick Deer. It's always got to be about him. The U.S. president Donald Trump has threatened to destroy, quote, destroy, close quote, Iran should its government attempt to assassinate him. Is this where the announcer says, false flag in 3, 2? The U.S. and Israel killed dozens of senior Iranian officials and military commanders during their bombing campaign, including the country's longtime supreme leader, Ali Khamenei, who was killed in a targeted strike on his compound, not his house, but his compound, in Tehran on February 28. The U.S. and Israeli war crimes committed then, attacking a cleric. A civilian leader, all violations of international norms and laws. Quote, 1,000 missiles are locked and loaded and aimed at the Islamic Republic of Iran, with thousands of more to immediately follow should the Iranian government act on its threat, pronounced in many corners of the globe, to assassinate or attempt to assassinate the sitting president of the United States of America, in this case, me, Trump wrote on Truth Social Friday. Cue the announcer. Countdown. Quote, orders have already been given, and the U.S. military is ready, willing, and able for a one-year period of time, subject to extension, to completely decimate and destroy all areas of Iran. Praise be to Allah, close quote, Trump said. Iranian officials have made no public threats against Trump's life. At the same time, people attending the funeral processions of Khamenei were filmed carrying placards reading, quote, kill Trump, close quote, and chanting calls for, quote, revenge, close quote. The Wall Street Journal reported on Thursday that Israel had warned the U.S. about an alleged Iranian plot to kill Trump, but provided no further details. Trump has ramped up his rhetoric against Iran in recent days, labeling its leadership, quote, scum, close quote. He also said he had considered the ceasefire with Iran to be, quote, over, close quote, as the United States carried out strikes on Iran on Wednesday and Thursday and Friday and Saturday in response to attacks on commercial ships attempting to cross the Strait of Hormuz. Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi condemned Trump's, quote, derogatory language, close quote, and blamed the U.S. for the renewed escalation. He accused Washington of violating the Memorandum of Understanding signed last month, saying, quote, there can only be mutual compliance, close quote. And as I said, too much money for his family and billionaire buddies to make, Trump tells Congress that Iran war is back on. Well, it was a never off, and just as predicted. The new announcement gives the administration another 60 days before it needs the congressional approval, according to the White House. U.S. President Donald Trump has formally told Congress that Washington has resumed what he described as, quote, limited defensive strikes, close quote, against Iran. But there's no U.S. interest in the Strait of Hormuz. So defensive of what? The U.S. House of Representatives previously attempted to limit Trump's powers, arguing that he lacked congressional approval for the February 28th U.S.-Israeli attack on Iran. U.S.-Israeli attack on Iran. Not the other way around. Under the War Powers Resolution of 1973, the president must withdraw American forces after 60 days unless Congress authorizes the war. In a letter dated Friday and obtained by the outlets, Trump reportedly argued that the renewed U.S. strikes on the Islamic Republic represents his, quote, responsibility to protect Americans and the United States' interests, both at home and abroad. And let me get back to what they attacked, what Iran is doing, and what the United States is supposed to withdraw its troops, withdraw its forces. How are they going to withdraw all the military bases in the Gulf Coast states? How? But responsibility to protect Americans? From what, exactly? Half a world away as well? What? The White House reportedly argued that the move gives the Trump administration a fresh 60-day timeline to continue military operations against war. And the profiteering goes on, doesn't it? In May, Trump notified Congress that the initial conflict, dubbed Operation Epic Fubar, has been, quote, terminated, close quote, after a ceasefire between U.S. and Iran was reached on April 7th. But that's only one agreement, not 10 deals broken. However, the armistice, now we call it an armistice, and I hope some of you are doing the research on these technicalities of the international law. Armistice is a new word we haven't heard for a long time. They all have meanings and they have context. I know these are the neustis and they have their ways to describe these issues the way they want to. But if you go and look at some of the words, they're not too inaccurate sometimes. The armistice and the memorandum of understanding signed by the U.S. and Iran by Trump himself and Iran on June 7th collapsed after strikes resumed last week, with both sides accusing each other of breaking the agreement. On Monday, Trump claimed that Washington is, quote, taking over, close quote, the Strait of Hormuz, the key energy supply bottleneck that has served as a point of contention since. Well, since when? Since U.S. and Israel attacked Iran, not the other way around. So I ask again, what defensive strikes? And how will they be limited when they intend to decimate all areas of Iran? The U.S. would control the waterway and charge ships 20% on all cargo shipped, close quote, the president said on Truth Social. Washington would also reinstate its blockade on Iran ports and bar passage for vessels belonging to Iran or its customers, he added. Now, how is piracy protecting Americans at home or abroad? And Congress doesn't shut this liar down? Well, because the compromise uniparty. This is not about protecting Americans, right, Satan Yehu? And maybe being represented by international disgrace is part of the reason. And a follow-up, redo, from the Shakedown Artist in Thief. Is everyone from New York like this? And true to form, on Taco Tuesday, Trump says he will replace the 20% cargo fee with investment deals with the Gulf states. U.S. President Donald Trump said on Tuesday that he will replace U.S. proposed 20% fee on cargo shipped through the Strait of Hormuz with trade and investment deals involving the Gulf states. Quote, I have decided to replace the 20% United States reimbursement fee with trade and investment deals that the various Gulf states will be making into the United States, close quote, Trump wrote on Truth Social. The waterway remains open to all ship traffic except vessels linked to Iran, Trump claimed. We will therefore have full blockade, but only on ships coming to and from Iranian ports or carrying anything having to do with Iranian cargo, Trump added. On Monday, U.S. President Donald Trump said the United States would become a guardian, quote, guardian, close quote, of the Strait of Hormuz and receive reimbursement equal to 20% of cargo shipped through the waterway. Guardian indeed of someone else's wallet. What's in your wallet, folks? He also said the United States was reinstating the blockade on Iranian ports. The U.S. has no land to defend around the strait. It has no territorial sea to protect. It clearly doesn't own ships it will levy. Maybe someone can explain to me, how is that not piracy? How does that protect Americans at home or abroad? And Iran rejects Trump's bid to police the Strait of Hormuz. Iran will not allow Washington to interfere in the governance of the Strait of Hormuz, the Ghatam al-Anbiya central headquarters of the Iranian military command said on Monday. Quote, we will not allow the United States to interfere with the governance of the Strait of Hormuz under any circumstances, close quote. And the command said in a statement as quoted by Iran's state broadcaster, U.S. interference in shipping in the Strait of Hormuz will threaten the security of global gas and oil supplies, spokesman Hussein Moebe said from the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. Quote, with its interference in the Strait of Hormuz, the U.S. is seriously threatening the security of global oil and gas supplies. They must be held accountable for their actions, close quote, Mohebi said, as quoted by the Fars news agency. Trump's statements, the United States is planning to guard the Strait of Hormuz and get paid for it, as Trump said earlier, quote, we guarded it for nothing, he said, Trump said, and now we're going to guard it. We're going to get paid for guarding it, a lot of money, but we just want to be reimbursed for doing all of this, for putting our people in danger, close quote, Trump told Fox News. Has anyone told this guy there is no money? There's only something that functions as money? Maybe we shouldn't give this guy a gun. He'd be dangerous. Too late. The United States president has threatened to launch powerful strikes against Iran, quote, we have 10 deals with these people, and so we're just going to hit them very hard. And we're going to keep the strait, and we'll probably run it, and we'll become the guardian of the strait, close quote, Trump said. Trump accused Tehran of violating an agreement with Washington, which he said had been a done deal. Quote, a done deal, close quote. Well, again, as I said just before, no, there was no 10 deals. An agreement that you made, that you did have, you signed it, that you have breached. That's the only thing done about the deal because, well, Satan Yehu and your profiteering billionaire buddies, insiders, and friends and family. Iran warns that there's oil for everyone or no one. And I bring up these things, and I don't know if you're getting the point about why you bring up what they have to say. They're not backing down, folks. This is enough. They've had enough. They're going to take their lumps. And they're going to meet it out. And so expect this to go a long way when you have someone like Trump has Satan Yehu in his nicked ear. And I just keep thinking about of all our soldiers, all our troops, all our men, all our women, a few billionaire boys and the insiders all being profited, and they're all from the same Zionist political movement for the most part. Tehran says it has struck a major U.S. Navy facility in Bahrain in response to recent American actions in the region. Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps has warned regional oil and gas exports could be blocked completely in response to the U.S. attempt to control the Strait of Hormuz. In a statement on Tuesday, the IRGC accused Washington of acting like pirates, quote, pirates, close quote, by restricting energy flows in the region and warned that other export routes serving the U.S. and its allies could be blocked in response. Well, regional oil and gas exports are either for everyone or for no one, close quote, the statement said. The warning came as IRGC claimed a new strike on U.S. military infrastructure in Bahrain, which hosts the U.S. Navy's Fifth Fleet and serves as one of Washington's main naval hubs in the Persian Gulf. So when Trump said there was no more hostility, did he remove all that? Did he pull back all these forces? No. So we never really actually complied with that 1973 act, it seems to me. But we can play games with the words, can't we? Because there is no law. We know that because there's no accountability. According to the IRGC, the fifth wave of Operation Nasser II targeted an NSA management center, a command and control center, large warehouses containing military parts and equipment, and fuel storage tanks belonging to the United States 5th Fleet. The statement said the facilities had been, quote, smashed and destroyed, close quote, in an early morning strike. The U.S. military has not commented on the claim. The latest warning follows Tehran's decision to declare the Strait of Hormuz closed until the U.S. ends its, quote, illegal, close quote, military intervention in the region. Quote, illegal, close quote, military intervention in the region. Washington has said its renewed strikes on Iran are aimed at protecting commercial shipping and freedom of navigation through the strait. So Iran wants everyone to have the oil, and the Strait of Hormuz is open to all non-hostile shipping, but the U.S. wants freedom of navigation. So what's the problem again? U.S. President Donald Trump has claimed that America is now, quote, in control, close quote, of the waterway and will act as its, quote, guardian, close quote. And I want to re-highlight what Iran just did. They closed any other ships not coming into that place. But here we have it again. Trump wants to control someone else's stuff. U.S. President also has threatened to escalate strikes against Iran, including attacks on power plants and bridges, unless Tehran returns to negotiations. In a Fox News, I thought he said they were over, folks. The region, oh, it's all done and done. Done and done and done and done. Did I say done enough here? But return to negotiations. In a Fox News interview on Tuesday, Trump refused to rule out a ground campaign, saying, quote, other people, close quote, could carry it out, and again referred to the Karg Island, Iran's main oil export hub. Karg Island handles most of Iran's crude exports and has been repeatedly cited by Trump as a possible target. Earlier this year, he said the U.S. could seize the island to take the oil, close quote. Taking, thieving the oil is a theme, isn't it? Guardian, though? No one asked Trump, nor upon the things that he's attacking. But guardian? No one asked you, Trump, nor upon the things that aren't yours. Pirates indeed, but worse, far worse, at least for anyone with a moral or principled or Jesus Christ honoring and exemplifying bone in their body. And confirming the international U.S. trespass in the region, Iran tells Gulf states not to serve as arenas for U.S. attacks. Tehran has maintained that its strikes on American bases in the region are strictly defensive. And isn't defensive true in this regard? Not Trump's defensive strikes, but this one. In the defensive strikes, you killed a bunch of little girls and boys in their Manab school, right? In this case, they're Iran talking defensive, it's true. Being the U.S. and Israel attacked Iran for no good reason, except Netanyahu needs it to further the greatest Zionist project and save his neck at home criminally and politically. Iran has warned the Arab states in the Middle East are legitimate targets for retaliatory strikes because they host U.S. military bases. The U.S. continued striking targets in Iran early on Monday, local time, marking the fourth consecutive night of bombardment. It's up to six or seven by now. On Sunday, Iran responded by firing missiles and drones at U.S. military sites in Jordan, Kuwait, Qatar, Bahrain, and Oman. In a statement carried by the media outlet ISNA late on Sunday, the Iranian foreign minister condemned the, quote, barbaric, close quote, U.S. attacks and accused the Gulf monarchies of turning their countries into, quote, an arena for its illegal and criminal war against the Iranian nation, close quote. Quote, the neighboring countries are obliged under international law to prevent the aggressor from using their territory and facilities to carry out military aggression against Iran, close quote, the minister said. And I understand Iranian missile system destroyed a state-of-the-art CRAM early warning radar and struck a gathering area for U.S. personnel at Ali al-Salam Air Base in Kuwait. So your sons and daughters are now directly targets, as I said they would be, for Israel. And for anyone thinking Iran will just roll over and die and go peacefully in the night. Iranian Foreign Minister spokesman Ismail Baghaei responded by arguing that Iran's actions were justified. Quote, Iran does not attack. Iran strikes on U.S. military bases and assets stationed in the southern Persian Gulf constitute a legitimate and lawful exercise of its inherent right of self-defense under international law, close quote, he wrote on X on Sunday. The war began with the joint U.S.-Israeli attack on Iran on February 28th. In international law, providing the U.S. and Israel no right to attack. So, what defensive strike is Trump talking about when he is the lawless aggressor? And why is Congress not challenging Trump's lies if it weren't that Congress critters aren't the compromised representatives of the Zionist Federation political movement criminal cabal operating under the color and cover of an organization, the fraud called the State of Israel, committing terrorism from the land of someone they illegally, belligerently occupy, pursuant to international law, and not the representatives of the constituent, we the people. Regular exchanges of strikes stopped after ceasefire in April, which led to the signing of the Memorandum of Understanding on June 17th. Hostilities resumed recently as the sides disagreed over the interpretation of the MOU and the status of the Strait of Hormuz, which Iran declared closed to shipping in response to the U.S. and Israeli attacks. It really wasn't the interpretation. Trump said he agreed to it, and then he reneged. He's not a man of his word. And for some strategy context, it was asked why Iran is not striking Israel this time. And the answer was that the Gulf state nations maintaining U.S. bases have their air defenses that was able to stop a lot of the missiles that Iran fired last time that were trying to reach Israel. And what Iran is doing now is systematically dismantling those anti-aircraft systems like that CRAM in Kuwait before they hit Israel again. And the graphic analogy, if I remember right, was the taking out of the blockers in a football soccer game before the long-range free kick. They take the blockers out and they got a better shot at them. Maybe defensive strategy is not for the impatient or impulsive. And why Americans no longer believe in America? And I thought this was an interesting insight. At least it should open up a dialogue, a discussion about the condition. I certainly don't know what people think. I know there's a lot of spirit in people about being free. My studies show that that's not true. There's evidence all around us. We don't have what we thought we have. And I thought this was a very interesting observation from outside. And I don't fully agree with most of it, some of it. I shouldn't say most of it. The perception is from a foreigner and doesn't know local stuff like anybody would and talks on generalities. But I think it's a good way to go, a good thing to think about. But I want to read through and we want to interrogate this. Why Americans no longer believe in America? And I don't know about that. I know we don't believe in the United States. Some of us know there's a distinction. Even though the United States of America and the United States are not the same, and they're inverted compared to the documents as you read. And this brings up a whole other problem about ignorance of our own establishment. America's 250th anniversary arrived amid growing doubts about democracy, prosperity, and national unity. And here's the other thing going on. The word democracy, I've said it's a weapon. Prosperity. We know now, today, since the last 30, 40 years, that's been turned into shared obligations under global governance. And this is the context that you have to kind of look at when you're looking at this article. So there's a lot to have to go through, but I think it does bring up very interesting insights, even from somebody who I would not agree with. I would have to ask every word they use, what do you mean by that, actually? Because here, prosperity today is not the prosperity we might have thought of when there was real money. And that's the other thing. We're talking in a fiat system on top of it. There's so much that we talk in generalities that are not, we can't actually talk about. This article falls into all those traps, but still, I've found it, at least it elicits ideas and thoughts. And I think we, as the people that are watching the downfall and want to have a place to live in the future or have our little ones have a place to live, we're going to have to think about this because we're leaving that future to them and we got to do it now. We got to have some ideas now and it's not going to be overnight. The United States has just marked a major anniversary, 250 years since it declared independence from the Great Britain, and in theory, this should be a moment of national pride with another historical milestone passed, another reason for flags, fireworks, and speeches about destiny. But the mood is not especially festive. 2 weeks before the anniversary, Reuters published a poll that captured the depth of the American anxiety, and the numbers were grim. More than two-thirds, 70%, of Americans no longer consider their country the greatest nation on earth, while 64% believe American democracy is in danger, and 38% don't believe the United States will survive another 250 years as a single country. The answers split sharply along party lines, with Republicans clinging more strongly to the idea of an exceptional country of prosperity and divine favor. Among Democrats, the mood is much darker. The pessimism has become almost worldview, as the United States has arrived at its 250th anniversary in the middle of a profound crisis of belief. And I guess I'm going through this and throwing in my interjection, my thoughts, as I was reading through this, because we have a much deeper understanding, if we're Americans, about what we would like to see here and how we're going to have to go through. And is this crisis that we're watching just a belief? Or there's some structural things going on that have got us here, that it's a crisis. It's an existential threat to those of us that had the belief that we were in a place that was the beacon, the example of what a nation could be, of people that were free within the context of a society. This is BTWRLM 677. In some ways, this resembles the crisis Soviet society experienced in the final years of the USSR. Of course, America never had an official state ideology in the Soviet sense, and nobody in Washington promised to build communism at breakneck speed, but the U.S. did have its own coherent vision of the future, which it called the American Dream. Is that coherent, though? Is it really? That's more of a belief, isn't it? So be very careful when we read this. He brings up some interesting points here. We didn't have an ideology in the Soviet sense. We had a different one, but it was underpinned with property. They do not have in the Soviet Union. The government is not obligated to protect the people that it is to serve. And that doesn't come as the police. We are told, you know, the police don't have the duty to protect you. The government does have the duty to keep the peace. That's what the sheriff part is about. That was supposed to give us the ability to do the dreams that we had to best ourselves if we could. And this American dream, some are recognizing it as a nightmare. That dream promised prosperity through hard work and freedom. But again, promises and promises. And this is what I think we start to learn. As I've said before, a pledge on the campaign trail means nothing. It's a pledge to nothing. We can believe it if we want. The dream promised prosperity through hard work and freedom. And I'm using prosperity in the word of wealth here, not prosperity like the new definition underneath global governance, shared obligations to a third party and an ideology. But promises, promises, I think we're finding out. But it must be that it used to be, and I've come through this, work hard, play by the rules, take responsibility for yourself, and life will improve. Your children will live better than you did, and your country will remain a model for the world. But in the 21st century, that promise began to fall apart. The first serious cracks appeared among millennials, the generation born between 1981 and 1996. Was it cracks only since the 1980s? Really? Go look back through there. No, it happened just before that. If we're going to keep it kind of close, I think it was the Joneses generation that got the first taste. But it wasn't even then. It was so far back that this got changed. Their parents got rich, bought homes, built savings, and traveled abroad. But they inherited student debt, unaffordable housing, unstable work, and the strange feeling that no matter how hard they run, the finish line keeps moving farther away. Older Americans told them the answer was simply to work as hard as they did, but younger Americans could see the numbers and how, with the comparable effort, earlier generations ended up far wealthier. So the old formula no longer worked, and that undermined the idea of labor as an absolute virtue. And without boring too much deep into the money, what money was, this is what starts to happen right when they pulled all the gold out in the 70s, right? The old formula couldn't work. If hard work no longer guarantees a decent life, then what remains? Freedom? Americans are formally free in that they elect presidents and congressmen. And that was another realization. That's all. Yet Congress is filled with elderly politicians who seem determined to change nothing and who have often leave public life only when nature finally intervenes. We're seeing a couple of that going on right now, too. Presidents speak beautifully on campaign trails, the pledge, the useless pledge. But once inside the White House, they usually follow the same old path, so while the faces change, the machine remains and freedom, too, begins to look hollow. For young Americans, the American dream is becoming what the bright communist future became for the late Soviet citizens as an official promise repeated so often that almost nobody believes it anymore. Once a society loses its vision of the future, disorientation follows, and almost everyone can feel that the system is not working properly. Let me add here about that losing the vision. You're going to have to gain one, find a vision, find something that you can be inspired into doing, into working toward. That's not what you're watching or not what's been gave to you. This is going to be it's a hard work, what I can see going on. I think it is possible. We're right at the cusp of maybe it's not going to be fulfilled because of the surveillance society, the digital panopticon. This is a race right to the end here. But what should replace it and where should the country go? Very important question. Well, American society has developed two sharply different answers. The conservative right believes America can be saved by a return to pragmatism with a freer market, support for major entrepreneurs, ruthless efficiency in public spending, Doge, did that work? And a foreign policy less constrained by old ideological sermons about democracy and human rights. In this view, America must stop trying to lecture the world and start taking care of itself. The progressive left believes the opposite, that the pillars of liberal democracy mustn't be abandoned, but that the economy needs radical restructuring. National wealth, they say, must be distributed more fairly, and big business, especially in the technological sector, is viewed with deep suspicion. But they just brought in a new word. The left would use the word prosperity. They use the word wealth. There is no wealth if you're in a fiat system. It's debt. It's evidence of debt. To whom? No one gets the answer, but it's debt, not wealth. And if we go through this dialogue, you have to understand that's what one of the major failures has been for we the people since at least the 70s. We got it before that. I'm not going to go deep. It goes all the way past even before Lincoln. So what our experience has been, anybody might be listening to me, is within this time frame, but before the 80s. And we've seen a vocabulary change. And we don't see wealth. The new villains are the tech feudal lords, billionaires, whose power appears to rival that of the state itself. And let me offer here, this is where corporations are people too, correct? I mean, these billionaires are actually working on a fiat system that is evidence of debt. They're actually in a big, deep hole, but no one sees that. No one wants to see it that way. They actually owe the money, if it's money. They owe the debt of obligation. But these, in fact, are the controlling sectors that are running, and they're not just men and women, they're corporations, because corporations are people too. But the tech feudal lords, and I wrote a long time ago, we'd be going back to the current Middle Ages. I wrote that back in right before 2000 or something. But the idea that there are two camps is a fallacy too, isn't it? And the monetary system is based in fraud. What were people to actually expect than what we've got? Donald Trump was supposed to test the right-wing answer in practice, and his supporters expected a revolution and a break with the old elite, a new economic nationalism, a government that would stop apologizing and start acting because he promised all that. But Trump's presidency has shown the limits of his movement in that there's not much of a system, and Trump doesn't think in historical categories, but in terms of Trump. If it were up to him, Washington would be filled not with new national doctrine, but with golden ballrooms to his own greatness. His approach to America's 250th anniversary has even disappointed some of his admirers. Many expected a serious program, or at least a symbolic reflection on the country's path, but instead Trump keeps speaking about his own achievements. At times, it's hard to tell whether America is celebrating 250 years of independence or continuing the festivities for its president's 80th birthday. So now, disillusioned by the right, America is glancing left, although the country doesn't yet trust the left nationally. But locally, especially in big cities, voters are increasingly willing to experiment with Zoran Mamdani, an openly socialist mayor in New York, an obvious example. This is no accident, as the largest cities are where the contradictions of modern America are most visible in terms of housing costs, inequality, migration, crime, decaying infrastructure, and anger at remote elites. If socialist policies succeed at city level, their supporters will soon claim they are ready for higher office. And what will their opponents do then? They could accept defeat, or they can decide that their America can no longer live under the same roof as the other America, which is the real question behind the anniversary. Not whether the United States has had a remarkable 250 years, because it has, but the question is whether it still has a common future. Perhaps America will find a new compromise, and perhaps it will reinvent itself again, as it has done before. But perhaps its two political tribes have already begun traveling in different historical directions. If over the next 250 years, U.S. history follows that road toward a civilized or uncivilized split, it won't be because Americans lacked flags or speeches. It will be because the country's old promise stopped convincing its own people. And if I was before my deep studies, I'm certainly not convinced any longer. Are you? The trust is lost. The government had one job, to keep the trust, and it failed. Now it's up to people to fix the things for ourselves. But it won't happen if there is, as this author suggests, two Americas trying to live under one roof, heading for a socialist experience. That part is incorrect as well. It's headed into a public-private fascist regime where the inmates of the cyber gulag might feel it's socialism. The political tribes are a fallacy here. They're going to have to die. They're a tool of the destruction to a free people. And all people will have to drop their differences in favor of the most important enduring principles for peaceful coexistence within themselves, not provided for by another of the world. And in that quest to be not of the world, we're getting examples and being overrun by, in an overwhelming way, things of the world. And we are getting a better view of the world and the overthrow of mankind for the machine. And even if climate change were about the weather, how could this sacred cow be considered for sacrifice, whatever the need? India not ready for 30-time infra needs for data centers. But which community anywhere could be ready for an intruder that uses 30 times more resources than the entire community itself uses? That's not even how productive communities are built. Data centers have massive power and water needs, and New Delhi needs a plan to cover this, Neil Shaw tells RT India. And this is another one of these articles. You got to read through what the promotion is. That's a promotion right there. We need to have a plan to be able to adapt to this. To do what? The surveillance centers. So when I'm reading these articles, you understand I'm reading through a depth that you can accept what they're saying, or you can challenge it, and then you got to look through that again, and then look through even what you think. But we got to have a plan to accept a 30-time load on our backs. But how now, sacred cow? So unless you're looking at the same control structure that is the future that they want, and they get you to pay for, just like is already happening in the foreign trade zones all across America, why does a people need to plan and cover for 30 times more than they actually need? India will run short of the key infrastructure resources needed to power the explosive growth in surveillance. I mean, data centers the country is witnessing without smart planning, a technology industry analyst told RT India. India has about 150 operational surveillance, data centers with over 100 on the way, driven by the country's AI boom and cloud adoption. Data centers guzzle water and power. However, both are in scarce supply in India's biggest cities, where the bulk of them are being built. Navi Mumbai, Bangalore, Hyderabad, Noida, as well as Jamnagar, RT India reported. A 1 megawatt surveillance, data center requires about 26 million liters of water for cooling. And a 30 megawatt surveillance facility needs 780 million liters, and a 160 megawatt one needs as much as 4.2 billion Bravo liters of water. Over half, 59% of Indian districts faced water scarcity in 2025, and 3% are facing absolute scarcity. And that's the future that they want, right? Scarcity. Globally, there is a scramble to put guardrails to protect the environment and minimize the potential burden on local communities for surveillance, data centers. Did you hear that, though? Globally. A scramble globally. Did you get the memo that these surveillance, data centers had become the necessity and to build yours? And who sent that memo to those that have been building all of a sudden globally? Who decided you will be living with a surveillance, data center in your area? When was that a thing? Quote, the amount of infrastructure required, the resources required to support these gigawatts of surveillance, data centers by the end of 2030, there's their target, is going to be unprecedented, I'll say. No society, civilization builds like this, 30 times beyond your need, instantly. A technology industry analyst at Counterpoint Research in Mumbai, Neil Shah, told RT. He noted that India doesn't have enough resources and hasn't, quote, even planned for this particular increase, close quote. They don't have it already, folks. In Mumbai, which is on course to be one of the country's biggest surveillance, AI data center hubs, an estimated one-third of the electricity will be consumed by surveillance, data centers. There are 28 new data centers being built in the city alone. Quote, we still have grids shared with public infrastructure as well as these upcoming AI surveillance, data centers, Shah pointed out. He said that there has to be, quote, dedicated power grids and supply, close quote, built for these structures. At some point, smart planning. SMART planning, as in planning, complying with sustainability development goals for the, quote, required type of electricity, whether it's renewables or whether it's nuclear, close quote, will have to come into play, Shah noted. The approvals for future projects should be templatized to incorporate clean energy standards, emphasizing renewable energy, quote, whether it is about water recycling, energy efficiency, he said. For us in America, templatizing is model legislation promoted by the Sustainable Development Promoting Bar Association members and judicial branch of the governments. He cited the example of Mukesh Ambani's Reliance Jio as a template to be emulated. At its Jamnagar data facility, Reliance envisions that 50 to 60% of the requirements would be met with smart renewables. Quote, the water recycling and everything is taken care of, close quote, Shah pointed out. Shah also suggested regular energy audits to scrutinize consumption patterns and separate building standards for surveillance, data center scale, electricity, and water consumption. But you already heard they already don't have enough. How do you do that? But scrutinizing consumption with smart SMART meters, no doubt. But Americans are so rich, the surveillance, data centers can take the resources from them and they don't care. Americans are so giving that way. That's how rich Americans are. Soon to be driven into third world banana republic status by fascist technoligarchocracy. But since climate change is not about the weather, cry me a surveillance center heated river as you promote a fraud and complain about a self-inflicted wound. India forced to balance growth and carbon footprint. Other nations grew first and then retrofitted climate change mitigation, former Niti Aayog vice chairman of Rajiv Kumar told RT India. See, climate change is still not about the weather, and climate change is not going anywhere. It will be coming back with a vengeance here in the United States, and Trump will have onshored and fortified the Siberian Gulag infrastructure to make climate change great again. And neither are these heat-dissipating surveillance, data centers going anywhere, because they will help implement and maintain that political climate crisis of the fascist techno-oligarchocracy. They will be Gaia-mothered in and immune. And to get a glimpse of this self-inflicted, seemingly increasingly popular future that they want, AI development must not harm diversity of civilizations. Despite the surveillance, data centers they feed from, stealing the water and power and how those diversified civilizations normally exist. The Chinese leader stressed the need to shape AI values in line with the common values of humanity. We just heard an article that says that there's two houses underneath one roof in the United States. They can't even get along. What are the common values of humanity? It's a trick question, no? What you heard there is no mankind in a humanistic technocratic worldview. In line with common values of humanity, effectively use AI technologies, strengthen mutual understanding and tolerance among different civilizations, and promote exchanges and mutual learning between them. Quote, to ensure that artificial intelligence remains under human control, we must jointly oppose the generalization of concepts of international and national security in the field of AI and the practice of placing the security of one country above the security of others, close quote, Xi said. So this is speaking to a global governance body over all countries, no sovereignty, creating specific standards for all to honor Gaia. All countries should adhere to a people-centered, is warm and fuzzy global governance jargon implemented in a fascist public-private manner in the West, focusing on you for compliance and consumption, not for you, but for the global health and welfare. People-centered is what he wrote. People-centered approach to AI development, making the technology a key driver of shared prosperity and common security, he added. As I said, focusing on you for compliance. Where have we read about shared prosperity? Agenda 2030? A2030? You bet. Shared obligation to a third-party liability to Gaia. The ideology of Gaia, the religion of Gaia. Common is communist, is socialist. It's what works under the overriding governance that sits above everybody. To unity, they talk. To the common is what they talk about, and to do that, that's where the concept of direct democracy comes in. Or communism. Some think it's socialism. Officially, people-centered. Remember, I talked about this last episode. This word is now coming back up. This is coming back with a vengeance. They're gearing up for it right now. Officially, people-centered development was first proposed by the regional advisor to the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, in the news today and being reorganized into the State Department. And that was done in 1984. And I read to you the Guru paper from 1985 that picked up there and started to tell everybody that's inside the system how they were going to work it. 1984. And if you didn't think the United States has been instrumental in promoting the global governance, or as I've explained, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, being one of the pillars supporting the subversion, People-centered development is an approach to international development that focuses on improving local communities, self-reliance, social justice, and participatory decision-making. And that participatory decision-making, again, euphemism for direct democracy, deciding on the subject matter gave to you and decided consistent with sustainable development goals, such as climate change, which is not about the weather, nor property rights, or the rights and property, because, well, you have no property and you like it, remember? The international development that recognizes that economic growth does not inherently contribute to human development and calls for changes in social, political, and environmental values and practices. Where, like climate change, not being about the weather, the stalking horse called environment is not about nature, as the surveillance, data centers are proving. What happened to all that talk about, oh, we got so much heat island stuff going on with these? No one cares. Nobody talked about climate change now. They're an integral part. So they had to do a little bit of shuffling here so they can get them put in, and then they'll be Gaia mothered in. If that's what they do. I've looked at some of these places. They're pretty fortified. I'm not so sure they just do what they're telling us that they're doing. But anyway, won't know until we know. Countries should strengthen awareness of AI-related risks and ensure the safety and controllability of artificial intelligence, paying close attention to both inherent and emerging risks associated with its development, G noted, is the comment of a humanist authoritarian. It is necessary to promote the establishment of a legal and regulatory framework, a technology monitoring system, a risk warning system, and an emergency response system, strengthening the foundation of security and prevent the abuse and misuse of artificial intelligence, close quote, the Chinese leader said, qualifying just what my opinion just was. The World Artificial Intelligence Conference themed Global Solidarity in the AI Era is being held in Shanghai from July 17th to the 20th. So how long is and what's after the AI era? Under global solidarity unity, there isn't any actual diversity of civilizations, as Xi purports to be concerned with, that is not under and absolutely controlled by a global governance overstructure, as through maybe the AI-enhanced and error-prone cyber gulag. And Xi Jinping knows better. And if not, why not? And I'd ask the same thing here of Trump. As I've told you, these leaders can be dumb as a post about this, and they can walk us right into the problem, and there would be really nothing we could do about it. And we won't, if our history is anything. Partly what's causing Americans a problem. What happened to the American dream? Well, there was a whole lot of foundation and fraud and management going on that we left it up to the leaders to do for us. We forgot about the adage that we had to keep tabs on what was going on so that we weren't taken advantage of. And if we noticed very quickly, we noticed even the appearance of impropriety. We the people, were supposed to be all over it. We weren't supposed to have a separate mind. We weren't supposed to have living in two houses. A house divided cannot stand, remember? That's what they want to do. That's exactly the plan. And this article I was reading here and before points all these things out. They're making the new future they want, their vision of how this is going to work. And it includes you being the product or the consumer, and you will be controlled. And you see the systems going in place. And the United States is a little bit behind. They're getting you. This is why the SAVE Act is so terrible. People don't appreciate this. They're going to accelerate you at warp speed right up into where you're able to be put into the system, just in that act alone. It's been dragging its feet since 9/11. That's where they started the implementation. When you're a criminal and you have no property, you got no remedies. There's no due process owed to you. Sound familiar? Not pretty good, is it? But that's exactly what they were given, is what they were gave when there's no accountability for wrong action. Murderous. Feral agents running around. soon to be AI enhanced. But Trump, if he doesn't know about it, he can still get us in trouble. We're going to get ourselves in trouble because we didn't stop it. And I'm asking people to start paying attention about this because it is that important. Things are happening so fast. I'm not so sure. Maybe within even 20, 30 years, I think it's going to be a lot different. It's not going to be recognizable on this at all. You watch this global, this people-centered statement is part of the Sustainable Development Goals. It's part of the Chinese Global Governance Initiative. I read about that before. These are all integrated actions. The monetary system is one big fraud. They're just going to again, the parity condition. They bring everybody into parity so that everybody is equal and unified. It's one less thing, one less contentious item that nations would have. Your direct democracy is the people getting to vote. You heard the other article. Oh, you get to vote on your representatives. That's all you get. And then they don't have to be your representatives. So what has happened to the American dream is people starting to realize, and a lot of people haven't, but some people starting to realize it was a lie. It is a nightmare. And to get it back, you see in history what it takes to establish or disconnect from oppression. It's not a pretty sight. Now, I'm hoping we get to a point, maybe this AI will help us. We get to the point where we figure out where the millions of us Americans are supposed to be, grabbing the one principled vision that we need, set up the plan, and work it out. I'm not necessarily sure that it needs to be a bloody war. The history says it needs to be. Lincoln showed us how it doesn't work. So unless we got a way around that, I'm not so sure. However, that's not up for me to decide. And it may be way late in my experience on this place to even matter. But this fascist situation where the corporations start having more power and start running the show on us and start taking control and exploiting our lives and our needs can be pushed back if we only will. And it does take a lot of work. So there's a ray of hope. I'll leave the broadcast on such a negative turn. It looks like it's overwhelming and we are not going to make it. I think it's a race to the finish line. I've said this for years and years. Do I think we can win? I'm not so sure anymore. But it doesn't mean, it doesn't take everybody either. That's the other thing. But we may have a ray of hope, foreshadowing, enjoying the right to alter or abolish the public-private Zio government of the world, soon to incarcerate us if we don't. Take immediate drastic action, it seems. Remember, 9/11 allowed the legalization of you presumed guilty. And I don't think people truly appreciate what that meant. The Federal Trade Commission and attorneys general for several states secured the right to repair settlement Wednesday with agriculture equipment giant John Deere and Company, commonly known as John Deere. Doesn't sound like a lot. This is the second time now where government is allowing corporations to make it look like you don't own a thing, which means you have no property and you're not going to like it, whether you'd like it or not, doesn't matter. To now have the right to repair attached to a property and have it settled in law a second time better is a big deal. This didn't happen by not complaining and not having to take the system to task the way the system is written. John Deere owners will be able to fix their own machines, the title. The Illinois-based manufacturer has faced complaints for years for withholding the software needed for repairs and forcing customers to use authorized dealers instead of independent ones. This marks the second right to repair settlement Deere has reached this year following a separate $99 million class action settlement with farmers in April. Though the class action compensated consumers, the FTC's settlement instead requires Deere to make its repair services available to equipment owners and independent shops. Now here's the diversification that we need, not the lie of a diversification of a civilization that we can't infringe upon when we're talking about an overarching global governance structure that's going to destroy all of it. The Declaration of Independence is some sort of a Declaration of Independence. Independent shops, equipment owners now have access. The FTC and attorneys general from Arizona, Illinois, Michigan, Minnesota, and Wisconsin brought the antitrust lawsuit in January 2025, arguing that Deere had illegally restricted farmers and independent shops that might otherwise service them from repairing farm equipment such as tractors. Under the order filed in Illinois, Deere will now be required to make diagnostic and repair tools available to equipment owners and independent repair shops, not only in its own network and authorized dealers. It also prevents Deere's dealers from retaliating against equipment owners or repair shops who choose to fix their own equipment instead of paying for Deere's services. The order is headed to Judge Johnston for his approval. Deere must pay $1 million, $1 million collectively, to the five states for antitrust enforcement costs and will be subject to strict compliance oversight for the next 10 years. Deere had said the lawsuit was baseless, denied that its distribution of service tools was anti-competitive, and argued that it could not monopolize services since it does not directly provide them. Apparently, franchises or certified dealers is direct enough. And so, there's a little bit of hope. Independence is there. It can be found through the law. You see, it took a while. You see, the corporations are not going to go down quietly. I'm surprised there's not been more of this going on. There are a few notable people that are advocating for this right to repair. Lewis Rossman's one of them. Just periodically hear his stuff. He's been a great advocate for this. But this is like a little bitty toehold. We lose this. We lose this idea of being able to rely on ourselves, rely on our neighbors, rely on the people around us for the things that we ourselves can't do. And certainly life is complicated enough. We need lots of help around. You can't be self-sufficient. You can be self-reliant a bit. Do most of your stuff. But you sometimes need to go find someone who knows how to do it. They have to be able to get out and get their stuff, too, to do that. And corporations that are now confiscating everything through their agreements and leases or whatever that they make is a silent killer to what the American dream, if I can use the term, was supposed to be. When they steal it all from you, when you have no property, they don't need to give you the due process. In fact, the property that they tell you have is just a consumerism right, and you will go to their arbitration, which is really not a court. And so they are changing this place right under our nose, and we're really silent to it. And I get it. We have other things to do. And I told you that was one of the problems. I could see reading the Constitution. They put the license, they gave a license to the thieves that the people could alter and abolish, knowing that people are apathetic. And as I said an episode or so ago, apathy is not a right. And so they use this as a license against we the people, and we get it down the road so far, it takes a lot to change that ship of state. And yes, there's a lot of people that say they don't need the ship of state. We're not nice people at times. There needs to be third parties that could say, I've heard people that would talk and say, well, we could use arbiters. Well, go look at the arbitration system in this country, if you want to go there. That's not an answer either. And this becomes the other problem. How comprehensive is our thoughts in order to fix and put in place the things that we need, not 30 times more than we need because somebody wants to impose upon us, but what we need, and do it on a productive wealth-bearing side, not a debt system. And that's another big problem. You want to be independent, you can't be dependent as a debtor, can you? Go track that one down, I'm sure when you see that, you'll notice that we didn't make it 250 years. When we became debtors based on the so-called money, the as money that we use, it ended. It ended there. It ended quite a few different places. Someone looking in, as I read that article, comparing us to Soviet Russia, doesn't quite get it, doesn't quite understand it. However, they get it enough. And I thought, again, it was interesting to read through and give us things to think about. Maybe we don't think enough about that. What are we going to do? It's not an easy question. I don't think they even claim to have the answer. I do know, getting behind a woodshed, you start to bring some modicum of neutralization, if nothing else. And some of you have engaged, and you find out you do it even better. You actually go beyond. You actually show the system is not capable. And yes, it was a tough time, and you had a lot of work to do and thoughts about it. But when you prevailed, you set the new record, haven't you? You now have something you can go into the future with, too. You realize it's more complex as well. And this is my hanging back a bit. When I say, can we do it? Well, we could do it. But I'm not going to say that we can do it on the mentality we have right now. We are probably pretty close. We're watching the situation. A lot of promises and no follow through. In fact, as the article did correctly look and say, it's the same old thing, right? The swamp was never cleared, no cleaned. You can keep talking about it, but it doesn't happen. People who die, demons in the system die, they're going to be replaced with other demons. And so that all has to be changed out. How we do that is another point. So we see all that now. That is a positive to my mind. But as fast as it's being moved, and we're watching nations like India saying we want to plan for this 30-time burden than we can actually fulfill. We don't even have the resources to do it, and we're going to plan for it. You know you're dealing with some insane people. And they're not here to help you, and not here for anything good for you. And so unless you sit down and think about what's good for you, and when you look around, let's just say, let's go down the track of the dishonest money, the fiat fraud, and you realize how that hasn't helped you. Certainly, anybody who's been around since the 70s knows that. Absolutely knows, especially if you're from the 70s, through the 70s. You know that. That should be the very first thing we needed to witness, and then we need to go back to where, right before it went off the rails. And that's where we're going to start to be able to then get more in control. And until we do, I don't know how we can pull it off. If you're in the honest money, there's nothing to track and trace. There's no digits to work with. You're going to have to get in touch with people and do arms-length transactions like the law used to be. You're going to have to know how to neutralize or avoid the system that wants to bring you in. You're not going to do it by getting a new feral ID just to go vote, to vote harder. I really wish people would get this idea. As I've said, you might want to do local voting where you may have a way to impress yourself. Otherwise, what I found out is that none of that works. It's corrupt top to bottom. Nothing I'm going to do on what I say. In fact, there's more pressure to not allow it, more resistance that steps up. People see this. Anybody that speaks out gets stomped on. There's not enough camaraderie amongst those of us that would say different to get the support. Yeah, as we have the donation for the RLM, we need the support. It's not coming in near as much as I was hoping, as it used to be before. And so, in a way, it's a tale of tape. What goes on? Why I'm wondering whether or not we can actually pull it off. I see great minds out in the country. I see great spirits in the country. I don't mean spirits like spooks. I'm talking, there's a great spirit in the country about being free, or to the free to the extent that we need to live amongst each other. But I don't see it organizing itself. I see it grumbling. I see it wondering what's going on. And that's a natural thing. But at some point, we're going to have to stop, and we're going to have to stop really quickly, because this thing coming around with all these AI surveillance centers is not a joke. They're going to kill you off while they tend to believe they're going to secure you as well. Well, that drops their load, doesn't it? They kill off people. People have a hard time, start fighting amongst each other. You're not fighting against a system that's oppressing you, but there's less people to deal with. No different than we see the great COVID swindle went after the old folks. Well, they was going after the pensioners, they would say. Yeah? No more of a head. That was pretty straightforward. And that's how the game is played, if it's a game at all. They have a managed number of people they're going to deal with. They don't care how that number gets there. And they're going to help it everywhere they need. And so your job is to not be those people, not be in those systems as best as you can. Sometimes, like again, a doctor, I have an excellent experience with a doctor, an excellent experience with a surgeon. Without those two, I'd be paralyzed at this point. So I'm not down on medical. I'm down on the fraud, the bad medical, people pretending because they can hide behind a license. The doctor that stepped on a nail out in a field, the doctor that said, no, I'm not going to give you a tetanus shot, a vaccine shot. I'm going to give you this, you're going to have to bite this towel while I inject hydrogen peroxide into your foot. Boy, howdy. I had that towel chewed, I'll tell you what. But that doctor didn't use a vaccine. So there's ways that we can do things that we don't need the system. They're afraid of us knowing that. They're terrified of us being self-reliant, being able to get together. We're not going to be able to do it where we have to have any dependency on a fraudulent fiat system at all. were out of even practice on how to do it another way. Dominic Nodder, I think his name is. I thought he had the, it was complicated for my mind. I don't, maybe not too intelligent, but he had it figured out how you'd go along with all these changing prices in silver and gold, how you'd change the value of coins and still be able to use them without too much trouble. And it takes away one element of question about, well, how can you have something that's worth $4,000? How do you do that? Well, when you look at that, that's 4,000 times less of a life that you have than when they started out with it as a money. That should have been a real wake-up call for people, but apparently it's not. Same thing with silver. Really has nothing to do with the price in some regard. That's just what you would exchange. But it's value relative to fiat and where they what they do with that fiat in that speculative system, that plundering system that you watch Trump and his billionaire buddies work from, is the problem, is what's defeating people. And I understand those that can work in a solid, sound money system have people that they work with. It's like they don't even feel the problems that most people feel. What is the price of gas going to be? We don't know. They play games with it in order for you to get vote harder. And all the time, it's just a cover for them to go do what you hear the unit party doing and what you hear Trump doing. No matter what he says, he's bringing on, whether he's ignorant or not, he's bringing on the future that they want and all the infrastructure that India is saying, wait, this is 30 times bigger than us. This is a bigger load than all of our industry can do at this point. And they want to do it to us in by 2030. Who's they? Why do we accept it? I don't even know. But I know how to identify them. And that's what I do behind the woodshed. I hope you start to do that yourself. You know them when you see them. You know them by the words they use. I go through the exercise today on the broadcast using the words that Xi Jinping uses to identify. He's coming directly out of global governance. His whole nation is going in that direction. Russia, their whole nation, people don't even know it. They're going in the direction. They rally around it. The United States getting hit a little bit too hard with the AI, the data center. So they're starting to start to pay attention. That may be a good thing. But I notice, and it saddens me to notice, people don't understand their property rights to defend themselves. They think getting on a Twitter, they think that getting in a video and complaining about the big corporation running them down is going to stop it. Yes, there's been some wins in the county. That also could help to stop them. One state, she's going to take as a parade, you know, she's going to, Hochul in New York's going to fly her flag. It's only temporary about how they're going to now do a moratorium on data centers. No, no, you want to kill them. If you don't kill them, they're going to bring the system that they want on you. It's already, you look at all the flock cameras that are already in. Look at the data centers that are already built. I'm astonished at how many, I've heard about them, but you don't get the appreciation. All the construction crews that are going on with all the billions that the Congress put in there to build those AI centers, those data centers, those surveillance centers. How fast things can change. And they are. Do what you can, at least donating to the RLM, get the word out. Get your own word out as content provider. Get involved. It's not over with this SAVE Act. You need to let your Congress critters, your Congress critters, they say they're yours, so they expect that. You need to call them. You need to tell them your opinion, and you need to, I say, back it up with some facts. You don't have to go on and on and find five good facts and then just lay it on them in a short sentences. You need to let them know you're disgruntled at least, and you're adamant, and you're persistent. And put a head on your shoulders instead of just walking in there with your heart on your sleeve. And I think we, the people, can start to turn this around, at least start to get an answer on our own endeavors on how to turn this place around, get us back to some independence. We cannot be independent with a fiat system. That's number one. How do you, a master not a debtor be, and the fiat buck is a debtor instrument. That's what bonds are. Bonds, bondage. So instead of fighting Democrats and Republicrats or whatever you want to call them, whatever name you want to put on them, it doesn't really matter, does it? See, it's all a fiction. It's all a fraud on top. They want you in that system and to do that. That's why I say go to principled positions. if you will, Massey. They're all politicians. I kind of like the guy. I don't even talk to him. He doesn't respond. Didn't respond to me when I was on Twitter doing much. Don't know too much more about it, but he has some good ideas. Going up against Israel to shut them down and stop paying them is the right thing to do. Whatever the politics, whatever the Republican name or whatever he's doing, he goes with Khanna out of Democratic out of California. I don't necessarily like the guy. That guy's a new ager type, if you will, the sustainable development type. All his words are that. That's what a Democrat seems to do. When you look at a Democrat, you want to put them in a package. That's them. Republicans do them different. But Massey comes in and says, no, we're not going to pay for this genocide from Israel. A Democrat comes in and backs him up. And a couple more do that. That's principle, not party. And so that's what we have to look at. We've looked past our party differences, if we have any, even independents, non-aligned, whatever you want to call it. Those are political kabuki. That has to stop. We have to look in the world and say things are not working in America, the American dream. Let's define it a little bit better. It can't work in a fiat system. But if they're not going to fix that, we fix it. We stop using it. And we look at every other thing. And we say what works and what doesn't, and maybe make a short list to start. And I think the Declaration of Independence was a good guide to give us a reminder, steer us back to where, how do we make our decisions? I certainly have looked a lot of that work and said, wow, I would never thought about some of this stuff. I don't know what their intelligence was, but they had an awareness of the world, and they didn't have the connections we have today. How's that work? Well, that's a clue, too. You can be more connected today and be more ignorant is a pretty fascinating concept that's been exploited in us. What I say about the protocols of the elders of Zion, do not look at that as the politically charged document, oh, focus on Zion. Look at it as a frailties manual for you. Look at how you can be exploited and make sure you don't miss the answer of how you respond and how you can be successful even against the things that you don't know about. That's what I took away with it. I think it served me well. I think the term is blackpilled. You get blackpilled because you got no answer. No, that's what the point is. You read that, you get crushed. Or you might get crushed. I got crushed. But something came to me, took 2 days. It finally came to me. There was answers inside what felt to be a crush. There's weaknesses in your adversary. And that's what you look for. That's what you exploit in them. They're not all powerful. Everything has a weakness on this place. Everything of the world has a weakness. And ultimately, it's going to be destroyed. So, don't yoke with evil. Get you into the things of principle. More, we can call them morals. Again, I said Jesus Christ exemplifying. Peaceful. What works towards that? Not as we see the kabuki figure, not as we see politics going on, not as we see a political agenda, the vision of a foreigner that has no concepts of what we're doing here. I say we're doing here. Though some few of us that saw, and this is where I come in to say, property rights was a pretty direct and obvious clue as to how this place should work. Not like Russia, where they don't have the property and they have no duty to protect somebody in their rights, in neutrality. Not as they do today where they attack you like everyone wants to know, well, how do you own your place if you pay property? Well, maybe you're not supposed to pay the property tax. Maybe they've got it, they fraudulently has put you in a status that's not supposed to be attached. Ever thought about looking at that? Maybe it's not supposed to be attached. Maybe the law says that, but nobody wants to go read to find that out. And once we get these yokes off of you get these millstones off our neck, maybe the American dream comes back. And until then, until those millstones come off, we're going to drown. We're going to be drowned in the sea of humanity as the they want us and how they manage us. As the monsters, the animals that we are without inheritable blood, because we didn't rise up and say, wait a minute, hold on, you damn dirty ape. This has been BTWRLM 677, and I'll be with you next week. Tech Diffs, for nature willing.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every sound.
Sunday. The clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, fierce and free. Pull up a chair, lean in close, lessons to learn. Dose by dose, behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. Hal's words ignite, the airwaves burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed. Hide a can of wood bass, ready to burst for unspoken truths and unquenchable thirst. Behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. House words ignite, the airways burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned. So mark the time when Sunday comes. Behind the woodshed, beating drums. Beacon, fierce and bold, in the fight for truth. Next week, heed the call. Behind the woodshed, standing tall.